Since we're looking at postmodernism this hour, it seems only natural we should try to define exactly what postmodernism is, doesn't it? Well, that's easier said than done, since the term means different things to different people. Amy Elias is an associate professor in the English department at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. She's also the author of Sublime Desire, History and Post-1960s Fiction. Elias says there are three different kinds of postmodernism.
The first one I call epistemological postmodernism, and that's the hardest one. And that really is a transhistorical thing. That doesn't have anything to do really with 1945 or 1960. That would be the kind of postmodernism that Jean-François Lyotard is talking about as an episteme, a kind of way of understanding the self and of knowing the world. And in that version of postmodernism, what postmodernism is a reaction to and a kind of the underbelly of Enlightenment modernity. What happens in the 18th century is the creation of a thought paradigm that exists strongly right down to the present day and forms many of the assumptions of modern Western thought, how we think about the liberal human subject, human potential, or historical progress, or the importance of scientific method for discovering truth. All those things come out of the 18th century Enlightenment. And in this context, postmodernity is the way of knowing the world that can't be spoken by that epistemological paradigm. It's the thing that can't be thought within Enlightenment modernity, or the thing that can't be represented within that paradigm. So this postmodernism is a post-18th century way of knowing that chafes against Enlightenment values. It's non-Western or non-discursive or non-representational or sublime, and it undermines the values of modernity. So that's the first big kind of postmodernism, and that's usually called postmodernity rather than postmodernism.
So we have postmodernity, to be simple, for number one. What's number two?
Number two is a kind of postmodernism, and that is an ism, that I would call sociocultural. According to this kind of postmodernism, that's the post-1945 social and economic phenomenon, primarily of capitalist first world nations. And the 1945 is really important here. That's the vision we have of Levittown, Pennsylvania, the suburbs that are burgeoning after World War II. And in fact, you know, the ranch house that was built in Levittown was actually modeled on the Quonset hut for army barracks in World War II. So that post-1945 World War II moment has resonances for the rest of the century. And so this kind of postmodernism is the kind defined by Frederick Jameson or Jean Baudrillard or Adorno and Horkheim or David Harvey and others. And it includes the diminished importance of the nation state, the increased significance of global migration, discussions about the economic importance of service and entertainment industries, global flow of capital and workers' rights, etc. And a big point of this conversation about postmodernism is the aestheticizing of everyday life. That big term, you know, that basically means that after World War II, our lives are increasingly dependent on technology and media representations, and the reality that we live in is turned into marketable images and sort of adult playgrounds. And so you get the discussions of life as Disneyland or infotainment industries and that sort of thing.
You know, I was just about to say that I liked this one best because it was the kind of ism that allowed you to have things to base all of your discussion on, and then you grabbed the ranch house away from me and went off with flighty intellectual discussion.
Sorry. Well,
but
you
it
know,
but it does make sense. There is something there that you can sort of look at to start the discussion, which is a little harder when you get into the earlier, the epistemological way of understanding self. There's a little less to grab onto. What about number three?
Well, number three would be what I call aesthetic, and that's the most problematical in many ways. That would label postmodernism as a kind of new aesthetic style that happens after the 1950s. And it would react to modernism, the aesthetic style that happened, between 1890 and 1930. And they gave us Cubism and Dada and James Joyce. You know, that's postmodern art retains modernism's experimentalism, but people have claimed that it strips it of any kind of utopian politics. So people who talk about aesthetic postmodernism talk about Andy Warhol, pop artists, Cindy Sherman, Keith Haring, In architecture, they talk about Philip Johnson, James Stirling. In literature, they talk about Thomas Pynchon. And the characteristics of this are many and varied. People have written a lot about it. A main characteristic is irony and an elevation of low art forms like the comic strip or the detective story to a high art form. But this one is the most contested because people claim that modernism basically did all this and that postmodernism is just the last dregs of a high modernism that exhausted all the literary forms.
I suppose that's because you can take a William Faulkner and a Thomas Pynchon and say that they are writing in similar ways, although, my word, they're not at all alike.
Doesn't that kind of blow your mind? I mean, people keep talking about that, but it's very hard to imagine like Gertrude Stein, you know, watching The Bachelorette or, you know, emailing Ezra Pound about something. There does seem to be some sort of break between the high modernists and the postmodernists. And yet when you actually look at the literature and try to articulate what exactly the techniques were that made these 1960s and 1970s and later writers different from the earlier modernist writers, you can't really do it very easily. The techniques themselves are the same, though the subjects might be different.
It's easier when you take the graphic novel as opposed to T.S. Eliot, isn't it?
I guess, but then you had a lot of experimentation with visual forms in the modernist period, too. I'm thinking of something like Blast or the avant-garde, you know, Dada as a shaped kind of poetry sometimes. And so the visual was also very important to modernism. This is just our form of it. Yeah. I go back and forth on this one, whether we have a postmodern aesthetic, but I'm much clearer on the fact that I think we have a sociocultural postmodernism. I like number two better than number three.
I was just going to ask you which one of these settles most easily in your mind as you begin discussing the difference between now and then, which is what it comes down to, isn't it?
I guess. I think it comes down to a bunch of things. I think it comes down to a desire for anyone to want to distinguish and mark off their own time. We want to think our own time has unique properties and is special in some kind of way. And it's the job of people like me to try to find intelligent or at least cool ways to talk about that. So there's a kind of desire there. But I think, yes, I deeply believe that the world has changed and that it is our responsibility in the academy to talk about those changes.
Amy Elias is the author of Sublime Desire, History and Post-1960s Fiction. Elias is also involved with a new organization called the Association for the Study of the Arts of the Present. You can find a link to their website on our website,